welcome to the Golf Lovers United podcast. I am Ben, Golf Lover UK. You can find me on Twitter and you can find me on Instagram. Be nice, don't be horrible, no need. And I'm joined by my partner in crime, my PIC, PGC Pro Golf Critic. How are you, my friend?
What's going on, Ben? Things are going well on my end. Again, a lot going on today. Just finished listening to Jay Monahan's press conference, sort of State of the Union address that he does every year at the Players. Like, every time I hear that guy speak, it just gets me really, really riled up. I'm trying to restrain myself, so I'm going to sort of pass the mic off to you again before I say something I should.
Yeah, back off. Right. All I'm going to say is I watched 9 minutes of it, and I do not understand how Xander Schauffele came out with quite a strong comment about basically having no faith in Jay, and then others said they've got faith in him. I do not know how anyone has faith in him. I'm not getting into PGA Tour versus LIV. I don't care about any of that. And frankly, we shouldn't be saying PGA Tour versus LIV, because it's actually some leadership versus other leadership rather than actual tours. But Jay Monahan, when he talks, says an awful lot of words, but actually says nothing.
Yeah. It's really PGA Tour against itself at this point. Like, that's really what it's come down to. I think everybody needs to realize there are going to be two separate entities that move forward at this particular juncture. Like, there isn't going to be a coming together of things. Like, we're going to have these two distinct brands. The PGA Tour is not going to, they're not going to change. Like, if this was going to happen, there was going to have to be compromise on their end. It's very clear that they're not willing to compromise. And I think that that's that. Like, I don't think it's any more complicated than that, unfortunately. So, you know, I feel bad for the people that wanted things to sort of come together, because they're sort of PGA Tour stands, and like, they want to see the PGA Tour be as good as it can be. I'm sort of on the other end of the spectrum. Like, I want to see what LIV can become. And I think you and I sort of share that interest. And I think that's really the most important thing to me at this particular point, because I have watched the PGA Tour for 25 plus years. I have been very critical of them, specifically the last 10. And it's just clear to me that they're not willing to make any of the changes that I want to see. So if I'm going to a local shop that like I've been loyal to for a long time, and they refuse to make any of the changes that I want, and there's a new shop that comes along that's giving me a lot of what I want, like, I'm going to wind up going to the other shop. That's just part of the deal. So, and I'm not saying everybody is like me, but I know there's a lot of like-minded fans. So yeah, that's just kind of where things are now.
Right. Bearing in mind, you weren't going to say anything about it.
Well, I didn't say anything specifically about the press conference. Stop. Because I could go Stop. Deeper, but I'm not going to.
Stop. Right. My computer is being crazy. Okay. Right. Here we go. So what are we going to talk about? I think a few people have said they'd love us to start the show at the top of the show, say, look, what we're going to talk about. So we're going to cover off a bit of LIV Jeddah and my trip, not do too long on that, because many people have heard about it. I want to talk about his tendency now for more and more players to lose their cool. Obviously, we had Lowry with the club throw and the kick, and then we had Wyndham Clark with a gouge, and Rory with the tee box and with a putter. I want to talk a bit about Hong Kong. I want to talk about Bay Hill. I'll touch very quickly on DP World Tour with Matteo Manassaro. I'd like to cover a little bit about Anthony Kim. And maybe we can start just a few minutes more on Jay Monahan's speech. Just very quickly, I know what we've said and what you're saying, but was there anything you took from it that gave you any indication of anything you didn't know? Or was it more just more confirming what we thought?
Yeah, I think it was all pretty much confirming what we thought. That's the thing about Jay Monahan speeches and sort of press conference. There's never any new information really uncovered. You know, I think the only good part to sort of come out of this, and this is something that I sort of tweeted about earlier today was they sort of confirmed something that I was suspicious of and pretty much confirmed it. So I've sort of been on this block that I felt like the PGA Tour, their sort of marketing spin machine, they are obsessed with like sort of trying to create new stars and new stories all the time. Like you see it every time a new player wins. It's like, this is your flavor of the month. It's Jake Knapp. It's Nick Dunlap. It's Matthew Pavon. Like whoever it is, like there's always, last year was Max Homa. Like there's always going to be these guys that like win or win a couple events. And like all of a sudden, oh my God, they're the new superstar on tour. And it's like, that's not how superstardom works. Like these things have to grow over a very, very long amount of time. Like if you look at any of the global stars in golf now,
yeah,
whether it be Rory, John Rahm, DJ, Cam Smith, whoever it is, Bryson, Brooks, whoever it is, these guys
have been
developed over a long period of time.
Go. But they have been developed, but can I just say something that really irks me? Now, I'm not going to deny that LIV have taken players from the PGA Tour and a DP World Tour that have been established and taken to LIV. I'm not going to deny that. That's inarguable. Mm. But the PGA Tour, they didn't give birth to the players. No. They came through the Corn Ferry Tour. They came through the college system. It's not like the PGA Tour built these players. And it just annoys me, that comment. Yes, they've given them a platform to develop and grow on. But this, we create players. You don't create anyone. Like these players have all come through. Tell me a player that plays on the PGA Tour in the last 30 years that didn't either go to college, come through the Corn Ferry Tour, or come through the DP World Tour or one of the other feeder tours. There isn't anyone.
Well,
because it has always been the top tour. So it's always taken other people's talent. And they're just annoyed now that that's what's happening to them.
100%. That's what all of the sort of animus is really about. And the thing is, like most of these guys, like in order to get to superstardom, it's not just their performance on the PGA Tour. It's their performance in majors. That's the thing that gets them to like that very top echelon. Because if you take, you know, a Brooks Koepka and you take away his five majors, guess who he is? He's Patrick Cantlay. Patrick Cantlay is not a superstar. He's just not. So these are very distinct levels to this. And it's something that's like very, very important that people need to like keep in mind, because it wasn't that long ago. It was, you know, 30 years ago that like the majority of the stars in golf actually played on the European Tour. So it wasn't like the PGA Tour always had all of the talent. Like this has been something that's been that's changed over time, because the PGA Tour has been where the money is, and it has attracted players from all around the world, because that's the whole point of professional golf, is playing where the money is. So, and now that's not the case anymore. LIV obviously is a very important tour for that reason, and these guys are realizing more of their actual value on LIV than they did on the PGA Tour. So
you just actually raised something very interesting, and a slight segue. You use the phrase "people play where the money is." Can I just read you an article from Golf Digest in 1996?
I know where you're going with this.
First in the minds of many fans, right or wrong, it creates the impression that the player is playing in the event solely because he's being paid to do so, says Fincham. This raises the question to the extent which he is committed to trying to win the tournament or play well, as it happened in tennis, and if he misses the cut, can create a negative perception. Second, a tournament that pays players to show up is inherently putting a cap on the level of stature it can achieve. That was former PGA Tour leader, Mr. Fincham, talking about Fred Couples.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, so Fred Couples, this is quite interesting, actually. I'm just going to read a little bit more. So there are a lot of people who talked about how you shouldn't go and play for LIV because it's guaranteed money. Here's some names, randomly some names, that said you shouldn't play for guaranteed money in an article about being paid guaranteed money. Nick Faldo, Greg Norman. Greg Norman's not against it. Nick Faldo was quite vocal about it. His charge was $150,000 an event. Not my words. These are the words of Golf Digest and November 1996. So if you have a problem, go and speak to Golf Digest. Fred Couples, it's this here that his average tournament payment was $125,000. This Jack Nicklaus was paid $100,000. Tom Watson got paid. A few of these people have made comments about taking guaranteed
money. It's a bad narrative.
Davis Love.
It's been a bad narrative this whole time. Davis Love. Yeah. That's the thing that gets me really, really fired up is the fact that...
It's hypocrisy, yeah. Jay. It's hypocrisy. Nothing gets me... It was okay for them.
Nothing...
It was okay for them to take money.
Nothing grinds my gears more than hypocrisy. It's something that has been part of this deals from the beginning. It's been part of the reason why I've gotten involved in this conversation because I've called it out from the start because I've seen it happen. And this is one of the bad talking points that's been out there from the beginning is, oh, guaranteed money in golf is bad. No, it's not. It's literally one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life because they've all been getting, all the stars have been getting some form of guaranteed money for as long as pro golf has been a thing for the most part.
And most sports, tell me, does Cristiano Ronaldo not try because his salary is guaranteed? Does Lewis Hamilton drive poorly because his salary is guaranteed? Does Dak Prescott deliberately throw another interception in a playoff match, which we should be winning because his salary is guaranteed?
No.
They all compete with guaranteed salaries. Anyway, we're not going to talk about it. Right, let's move on because we've done it to death and it just gets in both of our tits. Right, move on. Right, where are we? Let's talk about my trip to Jeddah. So let's do it very quickly. I've done it to death. For those that haven't heard it on other podcasts, I've been on about three or four others and just not done on ours yet. I had a great opportunity to go out to live Jeddah. Royal Greens is a absolute bucket list course. And my one criticism about Royal Greens, it's only got three holes on the Red Sea. Right. It's got 15, 16 and 17. To only have three holes in the Red Sea is a travesty, but bloody hell, what are three holes, especially 15 and 16. Yep. It's an incredible course in condition like nothing you've ever played. You play 10, which is a lovely par four. If it can be described as anything, it's actually quite an easy par four. You bang it up the left-hand side. The wind's going to take it left to right. It's a little bit shielded because of the mounding of the ground. And it's a nice, easy, accessible green. You're feeling really good. You get to hole 11. It's a 140-yard par three, playing 200 yards into the teeth of a wind, uphill to a green that's got three tiny plateaus on the actual green. The course is incredible. And I had a great time. I met so many players. I said hello and spent 2, 3, 4 minutes with so many players everybody knows about. I got to chat with Bryson. I had 15 minutes chatting with him one evening. Just an engaging man. If you have any doubts about Bryson's love of golf, you really need to reassess. Bryson loves golf like fish love water. It is unbelievable. His passion for golf is just another level. And I love watching him. Like, if you watch him walk around, he bounces. He's so excited just to be around golf. Like, I imagine if he wasn't good at golf as a player, he would have ended up being at a range working as a coach or something. He just loves everything about it. So good to spend time with players. Real surprises of people I got to spend time with. Anirban Lahiri. What an amazing guy. What a great fun bloke. Shout out to the Live guys who got us out there, allowed us to be there. It was amazing. Look forward to hopefully being in Valderrama and doing Live UK. Just really, really good time. Have you got any questions, Jay, that I've maybe not have touched on?
No, I feel like we've actually talked about Jeddah pretty much till the cows come home. I will say one of the biggest complaints that I think that you and some other folks have had is the fact that it's not the course Royal Greens isn't necessarily in Jeddah proper. It's like kind of an hour away.
65 kilometers north.
Yeah. So it's in a town called King Abdullah Economic City. Now, me personally, and this actually is a great segue to Hong Kong, I have an affinity for, and I mentioned this during the Hong Kong broadcast for Live, and it was actually featured on the Live broadcast I saw. I love golf courses that are sort of around a proper city. And actually, Don Boulay corrected me. He was like, well, Hong Kong Golf Club isn't exactly in downtown Hong Kong. It's kind of on the outskirts. But it doesn't matter because there's buildings around it. There's been sort of a city that's been constructed around it when you have this great piece of property that's been there for a long time. It's something about golf courses that I really like. And unfortunately, Royal Greens doesn't really have that yet. That may happen at some point, but we'll see.
It will do. They are building a behemoth of a hotel. So if I'm looking at the Red Sea and I'm looking up, I'm on 17th green, looking at 17th tee to the sea, they are building a hotel that, I don't know, maybe sleeps 4 billion people. It's absolutely massive. Right. And I've been told that in Cake, as they refer to it, King Abdul Economic City, in Cake, they are going to be building that up to make it a family destination, a bit like some parts of Dubai. They're going to be putting in theatres and a small theme park, things like that. So they're going to turn it into that. And I think the talking was they might put another golf course in. But look, we've done Jeddah to death. I just thought having not covered it on our own podcast was a little bit weird. And the one thing I would say to anyone, if they've watched the event, is I don't think the cameras, it's not Liv's fault, because it's a bit like Augusta. You know, at Augusta, like, the first thing everyone says is the cameras don't tell you the undulations and the level changes. I having watched that Jeddah event once on the DP World Tour and twice on Live at Royal Greens, I thought it was relatively flat. Right. Bloody hell.
No. Yeah.
It's not. Right. And I think sometimes you don't get that image of there. It's rolling fairways and obviously all man made. It wasn't natural, but it doesn't come across. And I wondered just how many courses that is the case for. And I think when I watched Hong Kong, and we'll go to Hong Kong now, I think having been to Jeddah and conscious of how the undulations and the elevation changes were there, I think I was trying to look for it at Hong Kong. And I wonder if because I was looking for it, I saw more of it at Hong Kong. Because it feels like Hong Kong's got a lot of elevation change.
Well, some of that is some of the camera angles too, and sort of like where signature holes is number 3, which is the downhill par 5 that like – you've got the city view in the background. It plays, you know, 60, 70 feet downhill. You get to see the entire fairway from the tee. Things like that, it's a lot easier to sort of see those elevation changes. But there's other holes where you couldn't really tell. And it's all it's just so hard for cameras to do it justice unless they're properly positioned and really show the whole thing, which is where some of those drone shots can help too. I think that came through on the broadcast on certain holes, but other holes, not so much.
So let's talk about very quickly, the winner in Hong Kong, Jeddah was, Neiman.
Yep. Waka.
Absolute freight one train runaway.
Yeah.
And obviously
top 5 player.
And the crushers on the team event coming from behind, and then let's go into Hong Kong. Yeah. Crushes won a team event again coming from behind.
That's crazy.
I don't think people fully get just how important this 4 players counting is on the final day.
No, it's critical. It's something.
I know you're a 4 aces guy. I know you're a 4 aces guy. I think Pat Perez at times hasn't always fired quite as well as he could do.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's the weaker link, but in the last 4 events, we have seen Pat Perez or Harold Varner not have a great final round. Yeah. So if you take the 4 aces, you've had the same with Torquay. In many events, you've either had Ortiz or Mito Pereira not have a great final round. I think this is what we've seen. But with the crushers, all 4 players are having great final rounds.
You know, the one thing about the aces that I got to mention, and I got to call them out because I was looking at this after Hong Kong and I was like, wait a minute, is this right? the Four Aces' lowest ranked player in the standings is actually Patrick Reed. Patrick Reed has not been playing well in these first four events. He's 41st in the standings right now. So if Patrick Reed is going to play that bad, the Four Aces are not going to be a top two or three team. They're just not. I think you pretty much know what you're getting from Harold Varner and Pat Perez and DJ. DJ is always going to be there every event. I need to see more from Patrick Reed. He's been the weak link so far, unfortunately.
Okay. So Hong Kong. Oh. You can tell by my voice, I'm slightly dying, but there we are. It was interesting for sure to see what happened with Abe Anser, mm-hmm. and he won it.
Yeah.
But let's call a spade on
this.
He
struggled that last day.
He had a collapse. Yeah. He went in with a 5-stroke lead and did his very best to throw it away. I actually think that the best thing that happened for him was that he got to that playoff. I know it sounds daft, because if he didn't get to the playoff, then obviously he doesn't have a chance to win. But one point I'm trying to make is that I'm talking for the rest of the season, because I think if he had just faltered, he could have. These things do affect you. You do get muscle memory. You do get scar tissue. I think even if he hadn't have won the playoff, I think getting to playoff and having another chance was very important for him and his positivity moving forward.
Yeah. You know, I think it reminded me, I mean, this just goes to show you that, like, people say, oh, it's hard to put together four good rounds, you know, on 72 hold tournaments. It's actually very hard also to pick together three great rounds on LIV, because this sort of the problem with the last day, this isn't the first time we've seen it. Last year, Tyr LaGooch in Adelaide, I mean, he had a huge lead. I think it was like 7 shots or something like that through the first two rounds. I think she shot like, I want to say 62, 63 last year. And then that last day, he wound up shooting over par and he had to kind of squeak out the win. Like, this isn't, I don't think that that's necessarily a surprise. I think that everyone sort of, that last day, it's just a little bit different. Like, whether it's four rounds or three, it doesn't matter. You have that little bit of extra pressure of having to perform because you know this is it. You have those people behind you that are nipping on your heels, and all of a sudden you make a couple mistakes, you let some other guys into it, you get more pressure. Like, that's really what professional golf is all about, whether it be a major championship, whether it be LIV, whether it be PGA Tour, or whether it be a minor league event. It doesn't really matter. Like, that pressure is something that it really sort of transcends tour. I was glad to see him. I mean, it showed a lot of mental fortitude, because, you know, similar things happened to Joaquin Niemann that last day in Mayakoba. Like, he struggled a little bit, wasn't quite as sharp as he was earlier in the tournament, and he had to show mental fortitude to get it done. Abe Anser had to do the same thing. And I think that there's a lot to be said for that. And every player that's able to do that and sort of get that win when everything isn't going their way is a really, really important thing, and something people need to sort of keep an eye on.
I think we both said that, I was talking the other day to someone that I'm building my bucket list of courses and where I'd like to play. And obviously I'm very lucky being in Great Britain that I get to play so many of the great links courses. And I know you guys don't really have proper links courses. You've got Bandon Dunes, but let's be honest, it's not true links in many ways. It's just by the sea.
I mean, it's pretty, having experienced true links courses in Scotland, I think Bandon Dunes is pretty much as close as you could get in the United States, but.
But it's as close as you're going to get in America. And also, like, you haven't got much of that, let's be honest, if you really haven't got many of those types of courses. So I'm trying to think of the course I can play and want to play. And I've put Hong Kong on that list. Sure. Now, that is on there for sure. Like, I think I've put Hong Kong on there. And actually, one of the things I'm really enjoying about LIV is seeing some different courses.
Yes.
Like Adelaide, like seeing Adelaide, like, I think I'd love to play there. Yeah. However, if you did play Adelaide, you wouldn't get to play the course that Liv plays, because they take the they take their two 18s and make them into a different 18. Yeah. So you'd have to play both 18s separately. But look, I think that I'm enjoying seeing some different courses. Now, a different course and a different area. I just want to touch on the DP World Tour and Matteo Mancero's first win after it's 11 years. Yeah. And I know you're not watching much in DP World Tour.
No, but I know Matteo. I know his story, and it was good to see him break through, so it's good.
Yeah. I think that having not won for 11 years, it says so much. And I just think that I know that we're in danger, you and I, of sometimes making everything about a Liv comment, and I'm very conscious. I don't want to do that. But what annoys me is when I saw some of the comments about Ian Poulter and about GMAC playing well, about Stenson playing well, having said they're washed up.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course.
And then when Matteo Mancero wins after 11 years and he's an older player, it's somehow treated differently. And like, for me, if you win a golf tournament or you play well in a golf tournament, it's great. Well done. And I am absolutely delighted that Matteo hadn't won for 11 years. And all the comments you see from all the old European golfers, like European golfers, I say old, anyone sort of 35 to 50 who played with him when he was a younger man or played with him just after they joined, everyone to a man is absolutely delighted he won.
For sure.
Just over the moon.
Yeah, just because I think whenever you have someone that is someone people see as being like a young star player that like, because he was very highly regarded, you know, 10, 11 years ago when he won the BMW PGA as a, I forget how old he was, but he was very young. He was in his like early 20s, I want to say.
He's 24, 25.
Something like that. Maybe even younger than that, but yeah, like he had a lot of potential. Like I heard a lot of people, you know, back then comparing him to like Rory and like other really great European players. And
he had the big Sergio comparison, didn't he?
Yeah, Sergio is another one. Yeah. Like he was a great player sort of early on, and it's just part of the deal. Sometimes like you lose it. Except it's always in there. Like you just have to, it's all a matter of if you can rediscover it. Just like we're seeing, it's a great segue, talking about Anthony Kim. Like Anthony Kim's kind of the same way. I actually heard, you know, Colt Nose was actually talking about this on, Fleshing It's, podcast, how he actually called Anthony Kim, other than Tiger Woods, basically the most talented player he's ever seen. So whenever you have anyone saying that about you, like that means that you've got something else in there. I've heard similar things about Matteo when he was younger, that he was like really, really talented. I never really followed him that closely and can't really say if I don't think he's quite at that level of like one of the like a generational talent. But I think he's a very, very good player and he's always had this potential to do well. I'd love to see this sort of springboard him into doing more things. And, you know, the way things are going, maybe Italy seems like a good market that maybe Liv wants to get into. Like Matteo might be a good target for Liv if he continues his progress. So we'll have to see how that goes.
But it was good to see that. And I was looking down the DP World Tour list and I'm just going to pull him up. On the system. Mm-hmm. So a guy called Jordan Smith finished in second place. I wanted to touch on Jordan Smith and what's going on with him at the moment in DP World Tour, because actually it's very, very enlightening. Jordan may be surprised to hear us talking about him, but the reason I'm talking about him is I want to talk about what it's like to be a professional golfer. And Jordan's having a kind of a good year in some ways. He's got a second place, but what's incredible is how people earn money. So Jordan's played in five events this year. He won in the Hero Dubai Classic. He won €44,000 at the Ras Al Khaimah Championship. He won zero in Bahrain. He won €7,000. The SDC Championship, he won zero. And last week, he won €101,000. So people here say that big 101,000. But let's say he'd finished 10th, he would have maybe got 40,000, 45,000. And then all of a sudden, with the travel and then paying the caddies, it is tough being a golfer. And I find it illuminating. And I think I don't know how you can do that for a career in so many ways. And I don't, as in just the bravery to go out there knowing how you've got to earn your spurs and it's a hard life to dedicate to, isn't it, Jay? Yeah. And I think that's why people were so excited about LIV with bigger prize money and guaranteed money finishing lower down. Yeah. And I think that's one for me. I think that's a great positive about LIV. It allows people to go out there, play their game and not worry. You've got young people like Caleb Surratt and Eugenio Shikara, David Pugh. You can go out there and just focus on playing good golf and not worrying about, shout out to Eugenio, a friend of the show, and great showing in Hong Kong. And I look at people like Jordan Smith and go, look, Jordan's 10 years younger than me. So he's 31. I look at it and go, it isn't an easy life, is it, Jay?
No, not at all. Like, this is something, especially if you're, if you have more of a global schedule, like that travel all of a sudden is like pretty, pretty intense. You know, which is part of the reason why, like, if you were going to have a global tour, like, it's got to be at the level of LIV, because you have to have, you know, people that are financially secure to sort of travel around the world. You have to have higher prize funds. You have to have some sort of infrastructure that can support that. I've never really felt, and this is something that, look, if you disagree here, tell me, but I never felt like the European tour was necessarily set up to be the global tour, because I felt like there's obviously very little guaranteed money. The prize funds are not nearly as high as they would be on the PGA Tour that could potentially fund something like this. And the Asian Tour is kind of in the same boat. So I've always felt like those two entities needed to collaborate more, because you're able to be a little bit more regional, where you can have like the sort of global tour where you have the European side, which is more of like the it's almost like the sort of, you can call it Western Conference almost. And then you have the Asian Tour as the Eastern Conference. Like, and then you have players that primarily play in those regions. So you could cut down on the travel a little bit. I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm not necessarily sure if that's ever going to happen specifically, but you know, I definitely think that, it's a tough life. Like if you're traveling across time zones like that, week to week, like it's a very, very difficult thing. And jet lag is a real thing. And sort of being away from home is a real thing. Like all of these things like impact the way players play golf. So, and it's something that needs to be a consideration for sure.
Yeah. It's, it is tough. And like, we look at Stuart Manley who came on the show, at the start of the year, right? So Stuart came on the show. He just won his tour card back. I'm not sure if you remember Stuart's story, full story, but Stuart has played 5 events so far. He played Bahrain, he played Qatar, he played Kenya, he played SDC, and he played Johnson Workwear. And Manners has earned €3,439 in 5 events. Now, you cannot tell me that $3,439 is covering flights to Bahrain, Qatar, Kenya, SDC Championship. I can't remember where that was. Was that South Africa? I think it was South Africa. And then another event. Yeah, it was. And then the Johnson Workwear in South Africa.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you're losing money.
It's a tough life. If you're, yeah, you're losing money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But some people like that. Like some of these folks out there, they love that fact that, oh, you can actually, playing a professional sport, you can like lose money. And I'm like, I want to know that, like, if I'm watching an event, that these guys are being paid to show up. Number one, it's a big one. Because if you miss a cut, you don't get any money. Like that's like, I've always had a big problem with that, because they are providing entertainment. They're providing value to that event, and they're not necessarily getting anything out of it. So
I just looked and Manners has won 9,000 euros from 10 events. It's a tough life. I really hope Manners can turn that form round and start to cash some checks, because he's a good bloke. That point you made there about players providing entertainment. Now, we know why the PGA Tour have done it. I've got a dreadful cold. Excuse me, everybody. I'm sorry, coughing and spluttering everywhere. We know why the PGA Tour have done that. They've given the guaranteed stipend of 500,000, and then you get taken off your winnings. And we know why they've done it, but I don't care that they've done it in reaction to LIV. I'm just really happy they've done it. And I'd love to see the European Tour say, here's £100,000 for everyone who's got a European Tour card. Just a stipend for 100 grand,
yep.
And we'll take it out of your winnings.
I think they've started doing that.
As you say, they are providing it.
Yeah, I think they said, I can't remember the dollar value. I think it was maybe 150,000 or something.
I don't think European Tour have done that, have they? If they've done that, I've missed that.
I'm pretty sure they did.
We know they've done it on the PGA Tour, but I don't think they did on the DP World Tour.
I think they did. We can verify, but I think it was, a reaction, a domino effect to, oh, the PGA Tour is doing this thing. DP World Tour has to do it too. I think that just got instituted this past year, or maybe it's for the future. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure it was 150.
Hang on, you're right. So DP World Tour has announced a record prize fund. Da, 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 da. The DP World Tour will guarantee 150,000 next season. In later response, a new earnings program will see exempt players receive money if they play a minimum of 15 events. So if you play 15 events, you will get $150,000 in the same way as a stipend for your winnings to come out of. Okay, so I feel less bad for Manners, and I feel less bad for anyone else who's not winning money. So at least they're covering their
costs. But considering how much they have to travel, they travel way more than the PGA Tour does. So it's like, for the PGA Tour to have it.
You say that. They do travel in bunches, though. Yeah, so the DP World Tour did go to South Africa for 3 events. They did go to the Middle East for 4 events. So while you're right, they do go to, so they went to Kenya and then 2 in South Africa.
Yeah.
And they had just done 4 in the Middle East. So they're hopping around when they're there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. The part of the problem, though, is that sometimes you only qualify for like one of those events. So it's like you have to sort of come in and go out. Like a lot of those fields are sort of like, you don't know who's playing in it. Like, you don't know if you're going to get in. Like, if Rory shows up at Dubai, guess what? If you're on the priority list, you're not getting in. So,
What if Michael Jordan's mate gets called up and shoots 174 over par and you don't get to play? I'm still furious about that.
I know. Right,
before we get furious and start breaking things, Shane Lowry put one in the drink, threw his club, then tried to kick it and missed it. Rory got angry.
That was great.
Well, he kicked at it. Rory smashed a tee box. Team
no video, but we got some really great audio of that. That was amazing.
Yeah. Wyndham Clark with, for me, one of the most unforgivable gouges out of her for golf course.
Yep.
Having given it 2 days earlier, the big one about memories of Arnold and all of that stuff, and then going to, if Arnold had been there, he'd have torn strips off him. And then Rory with a little missed putt and putt gouge into the green. Now, I've lost my temper on the course. I've had 3 8 irons reshafted, Joe. but I don't do it on the course. I'll slam it into my bag. I now don't put my rangefinder in the front pocket. It goes in the top pocket clipped on because I slam it into the front of my bag. If I'm going to break in, I'm going to break my stuff. I know someone said to me as a reply, they don't think there's more of it. They just think we see more of it. And that's fine. I understand that. The more you look for something and the more something is televised,
I think there's more of it. I definitely think there's more of it.
But I actually think there's more of it.
And my theory has been, especially on the PGA Tour, there's just been just this something in the ether. There's just like a general frustration. There's like things are unsettled. People don't know what the future is going to look like. Like this seeps into people's mentals. It really does. Where it's like,
do you think it's giving up the guaranteed money, do you think it's like having shaken hands on a deal and then said you're going to go and then not going? Do you think it's being offered 50 million and asking for 100, being offered 60 and then saying no? Do you think these things, I'm not saying that's what happened to Shane and Wyndham. I'm not saying that at all. Do you think that is what's happening to people? They're getting angry, maybe not knowing what's going on.
I think that's part of it. I think other people, like, they just kind of have a track record. Like, I know Wyndham has definitely had a track record for just sort of losing his cool on the golf course. I definitely think, and that's actually, he's performed pretty well early in the season. Like, he won at Pebble in 54 holes. So, like, he's played
he came
well.
Second at Bay Hill. He came second at Bay Hill. He played great.
Yeah, second at Bay Hill. Like, yeah, he's probably been the top player on the PGA Tour this season. So I think that that's part of it. I do think that there's also this, like, look, if I was Wyndham Clark and, like, I basically gave up $50-60 million guaranteed, I'd be pretty upset about it too. So, like, he's obviously going to do very
hang
well.
On, Jay, hang on. Hang on, Jay. Haven't they got these fake shares they can't sell?
Yeah, that's
my question for Jay Monahan. If I could have been in that press conference, have been, Jay, you're giving these players shares in the PGA Tour Enterprises. Please explain to me, as if I was a child, how are they going to be able to sell those shares to realize the value? And if they do, what happens to the new players coming up? Are you mysteriously going to create new share classes? He wouldn't have been able to answer it because we know it's a farce.
He would give the usual Jay Monahan deflection that I've gotten very, very used to. And he probably doesn't have the answer to that question anyway, but there's just too many mouths to feed at the PGA Tour. Like, it's always been part of the problem with how that whole structure is set up. Like, they are not really set up to properly compensate the top players, which is the whole reason why LIV Golf even came about. It's the whole reason why the PGL was a thing, and that started to come into the ether 10 years ago. Like, these are things, it's something Phil and Tiger have been talking about for as long as I can remember. It's something that, like, even going back to, like, Greg Norman and, like, Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus before that, like, this has all been coming. Like, these top guys needed to realize more of their value. They're finally starting to do that. The establishment is pissed. They hate the fact that they're getting this money, which is part of the reason why they've been so, like, trying to box them out at, like, every turn. So, and I think that we're getting to a point, hopefully, where people just accept that this is the new way that it is. And if you want to be part of that class of player, there's one place to be part of that class of player where you're going to be properly compensated for the value that you bring. And then there's another one that's totally, the model's more old school, meritocracy, you know, legacy and tradition, all that crap that we've heard for many, many years from the PGA Tour. That's fine. I don't have any problem with that. It's just a totally different concept.
Is legacy and tradition gouging out massive holes in the fairway and smashing tee boxes? I'm just checking. I look up legacy and tradition in the dictionary and I don't get a picture of gouging fairway.
There's definitely people that have been doing that for a while, but that is where having more cameras on the course 100% catches that. There's definitely been players that have had really, really bad attitudes. Even though I love him to death, Sergio Garcia is one of the worst offenders of this.
Yeah, I'll call out when Sergio did. So I cannot find anywhere Hatton broke that putter. I watched seven holes and he had played to see if I could find him on the catch up cam to see what happened to that putter. So I'm thinking he broke it on a bag, not on the ground.
Probably.
Now, I just want to say something. My favorite comment, that post I put up about Wyndham smashing the ground, and it just went viral, like 500,000 views, something ridiculous. And my favorite reply was, poor old Wyndham. Imagine actually having a shot shown on the PGA Tour. It's normally adverts.
That's true.
he got really unlucky not doing a commercial break.
Yeah, I'm shocked they didn't cut away to, like, another commercial immediately. That would have been, you know, that would have saved him a little bit of issues. But no, it's just bad.
So we're now on. Let's just talk about what I'm calling the PGA Tour's big problem. And I don't mean the tour, I mean the players. Scottie Scheffler, 16 out of 16 putts inside of 15 feet. It's an all-time PGA Tour record. Yeah. Now, when I see these records, I saw someone else say it wasn't a PGA Tour record because of an opposing whatever. There was a few things that said it wasn't. But regardless of whether was an all-time record or it was one of the two all-time records, 16 out of 16 putts inside of 15 feet is absolutely incredible.
He knows those greens really well. He's won there before. He has confidence there. That means a lot. I think that he, I've had this conversation with a lot of people the last, probably year, thinking that he had the yips with the putter. I didn't think it had anything. It wasn't a mental problem. It was a physical problem where his putter, I mean, sometimes you just get so comfortable with a putter. You're not lined up properly. I could tell his feet and his shoulders were never really aligned to where they needed to be. It was always off a little bit. So it makes it really hard to start the ball. Even if you have the read right, it makes it very hard to actually start the ball online and have it go where you want it to go. So that was a really big issue for him. And Rory suggested about a month ago, he's like, Scottie Scheffler needs to go to a mallet putter. Rory's going to the same TaylorMade Spider X putter that I have also used. It's a great putter. I will say that. Shout out to TaylorMade. No free ads though. So. It's not. but it is a great putter. It is a great putter, especially for someone that's struggling.
I've used it. I've used it, and I find it's got a soft feel to it that I don't like. So for me, it's not a great putter. Some people quite like that soft feel. I like a bit of response in the hands, which is why I got rid of my Odyssey. Yeah. And now I've moved to the milled face one that I've got. Okay. But everyone's different, aren't they?
Yeah, because he had a milled face putter for a long time. Sometimes it just takes, you gotta try something different. Like if you're struggling with your putter, that's why there's so many grips. There's the claw grip. There's the sort of left hand low, there's standard grips, there's the big grips, there's the thin ones, there's all sorts of things you can do if you're struggling with your putting. The most important thing is you have to keep an open mind to it if you're struggling, and you have to be willing to try other things. Scottie finally tried something new, and voila, he's all of a sudden he became the best putter on the PGA Tour almost overnight. So I think that there's always things that people need to keep in mind. I know people get loyal to certain putters. Obviously Tiger's been loyal to his Scotty Cameron for a long time. I've been on the block that he needed to get rid of that putter a long time ago. As you get older, you need something with a little bit more weight to it. That's just sort of my perspective. I will always advise people to try new things. So I'm glad that he did it. I'm glad that he's playing well. It's a good time of year for him to start playing well and putting well. We'll have to see how long, if this is just a honeymoon period or if it actually has staying power, because that's the one question. You can always have a good putting week here and there, even if you're a bad putter. The question is he going to be able to maintain it for the season?
And I put up a post yesterday, so obviously he's had one win this season. Over under 5.5 for the year.
I think that's high. I think that's really high. I think he can get to a 3 or 4. I think getting to 6 is a whole nother category. Look, we are looking at and people hate it when I say this, but we are looking at a diluted PGA Tour.
That's why I put it. It is inarguably a weaker PGA Tour field.
For sure. Which is part of the reason why it's possible. I still think that we just have to see if this is something that he's going to be able to maintain or not. Because if he's not able to maintain this, it was just a good week. It was a place there was one in the past where he has confidence.
If he comes out and runs 7 by and leaves 4 short in the first 11 holes, we're back onto Scottie's got issues with the putter. Right, last and not least, is the return of Anthony Kim. So it's been confirmed that Anthony Kim has not had his clubs fitted.
It's crazy.
And I actually heard something. I heard something was amazing, and I really loved this. And there's absolutely no criticism in what I'm about to say. It's actually admiration and love for what's going on. It was like someone had frozen and thawed out a man from 500 years ago who saw technology. Yeah. Because he didn't know about TrackMan.
Yeah. He had no idea
about the new club fitting technology.
Yeah, he was like unfrozen caveman golfer for sure. Yeah.
It was absolutely amazing. Like, and I actually think that was really quite sweet. And he's now going to get fit and fit for clubs. That he's playing in Macau, wants to grind his game a bit more and get his game a bit better. And I think that's fantastic. Yeah, and then the idea is he gets back to America. Obviously, they've got Doral in 2 weeks' time. Was it three weeks? We've got Doral in 3 weeks. So he's got time to get fit. And I want people, I said in my interview with Chris McKee that's knocking around somewhere now, that I spent 15 seconds maximum, maybe 12 seconds with him. I was introduced to him, said, hello, how are you? And said hello to him. And I said, best of luck. And he said, thank you so much. And he was just really nice. And it seems like everything about him is about family, with his family being present and his friend on the bag. And that's great. He's comfortable with his friend on the bag. But does he now need a real, real caddy? I don't mean that. I'm not being rude. Does he now need a trained?
Yes.
A top-end caddy?
Because you need someone that knows the rules, number one. Because his caddy, there were a few instances that...
Oh, he didn't know the drop rule, did he? He didn't know the drop rule wasn't shoulder height. Well, he thought he didn't know his height.
It's things like that. There's also the fact that if he had a professional caddy, like there were several times, especially in Jeddah, where he could have gotten TIO relief if he had an experienced caddy that sort of knew.
The one he had to lace through the trees and sling it around the
tree. He could have easily gotten relief and have to hit that shot.
He could have gone like six clubs to the right and not been in the trees.
Exactly. Which is like a good caddy can easily save you 2-3 shots around. And I think that's the difference between him, you know, finishing in last place and sort of finishing in the middle of the pack. I think that his talent is clearly there. I think that his putting hasn't left him after 12 years. Like, that's the one thing that's been pretty impressive. Like, his short putting, like, he's missed like one or two here or there, but overall he saved a lot of pars from really bad spots because he's been really dialed from that 6 to 12 foot range, which is like critical. So if he starts to like raise the other levels of his game, like he gets properly fitted, he starts getting comfortable with his equipment, which is a very important thing. And you couple that with, you know, maybe one of the best putters of the last 15 years. Like, I mean, I think you could see some interesting stuff from Anthony Kim towards the back half of the season. So I wouldn't be surprised if he had, you know, like a couple top 10s or like, you know, top 15s or something.
And the last thing I'll say on the Anthony Kim thing is that he's obviously been through some things.
Oh, for sure. And that's going to come out now, at some point soon.
Yeah, it is. And there's lots of rumors and lots of people making comments about his appearance and this, that, and the other. And I find it so utterly classless. Yeah. We all have different lives we lead and things we go through. And I am amazed every day at the nastiness of social media. And the horrible comments about people's appearance and about saying this has happened to them, this has happened to them. And I just don't know where the kindness has gone, Jay. And it really pisses me off because these people, they wouldn't say it to their
face. Of course not.
They say they would, but they'd have a ball out, a glove out and a pen asking for an autograph.
That's why.
And I find this faceless anger and bullying so pathetic. It's just horrible. Just be nice. You might not like AK playing on Live. I don't care. But there's no reason to be nasty. And Jay, he's going to tell his story.
Yeah.
And it's going to be good to hear. But let him tell his story when he wants to tell it.
Except this is also part of the reason why I've been very adamant about this, which is part of the reason why I've, again, tried to stop responding to as many haters as I can. It's because a lot of this sentiment is not real. A lot of this stuff on Twitter, like these really nasty opinions and such, they're just not real. A lot of them are fake accounts. A lot of them are troll accounts. It very rarely comes from accounts that are sort of have names and faces attached to them. They specifically log on to these platforms to be nasty so that they can get out some of these frustrations from their normal lives that may not be that great. So, and it's a realization that I've come to over the course of time, which is totally fine. Like, as we've become a little bit more sort of public figures, like, it's something that we have to be prepared for. And it's definitely something that I've seen. And except, like I said, you have to take a lot of this with a grain of salt. People are going to be mean. People are going to be nasty. There's never really any excuse for it. Like, as much as I've gone hard after people, like, I've never... it's just not something that like interests me to be that sort of cruel or sort of mean spirited, because it's just not, it isn't necessary. So it's something that I've obviously taken a step back from, and it's something that I think everybody else needs to keep that perspective.
Sorry, I talked over you. Sorry, mate. If we want to have fun, I could read some of the comments from some that I've received recently. Some of these are great. Fat, bold, ugly prick. That was a nice one. You're ugly and have never had a woman. That's a lovely one. What's wrong with your face? This is about me. This is amusing me. No woman's ever slept with you. Like it's bizarre. It's absolutely, honestly, it's thoroughly bizarre. You're just a little child. What's wrong with you? You're a pussy. You're pathetic. So is your face.
Stupid.
This is one of my favorite. You're a failed golf pro. Go get better. Never try to be a golf pro. You're a moron. Like, honestly, that's just some of the stuff I get. That was because I said I thought Wyndham Clark was wrong for smashing a club into the ground. Like, that's just some of them. And I don't get it. Like, why are people so angry? Oh, one of my favorites, I can't quite remember, mm-hmm. which is, have you given up your job because you're never going to make money with 302 YouTube followers?
I think I saw that one. Or it might be the same one commenting on my stuff too. Yeah, yeah.
And I wrote back saying, thanks for subscribing and joining in the algorithm. He said, every penny helps pathetic weasels like you. I'm like, what is wrong with people? Like, I don't like coffee, right? I hate coffee. I think it tastes vile. I've never gone onto a coffee supporters page and written, you are pathetic, you're ugly for liking coffee. What's wrong with people?
You know, here's what I want you to do, though. We need to start track, because this is something that I did in 2022. You need to randomly track, like, I don't know, 50 to 100 of these comments that you're getting now. Go back in 6 to 12 months from now, see if those accounts still exist. Because that's something that I did in 2022. And guess what? Most of those accounts don't exist anymore. That tells you something about what's really going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. Well, look, it makes me laugh. And like, I have comments about, you must be broke to be going to work for Liv. And other people go in, you must be rich to take yourself out to Jed. I'm like, I don't like, yeah. What I love is that I get insults on both sides of the coin. I'm like, can you two have a chat with each other and work out what you're cross about? Because like, I haven't got time for it.
That's why some of it, like I said, I don't even want to give this, you know, too much traction, because a lot of it's fake and I don't want it to impact the things that we say, the things that we do. And like, even given the 2 minutes that we have, like, it's probably 2 minutes too many. So, which is part of the reason why
it probably is, but it just made me laugh because those people won't be listening to this, but our regular listeners who've got to know us are going to laugh at some of those comments for sure.
And look, I've got to pass some of this accountability on to the PGA Tour, the golf media, their media partners, because they could have put a stop to, they could have tried to put a stop to some of this negativity a year ago, 2 years ago, and they have refused to do it. They've only made this divide worse. They have only made it nastier. And look, we just got to be prepared for it. Like I have been prepared for this from the beginning. This is, and I know you hate me talking about it, but being a fan of Duke basketball, that's like the most hated college basketball team here in the United States. I've had to hear this for 20 years, even from family members that want to like come at me with, you know, negativity. And it's like, that's only made me stronger. And like if people think negative comments are going to like impact me in like a way that's going to like make me shrink away from that, they've got another thing coming.
But let's call it quits there, because I need to go to bed. All I'll say is I would like some of the insults to be consistent. I get accused of being a lefty. I get accused of being a righty. I think they mean politically not handed. But it's just so funny. Look, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to Jay and I and for indulging our 5-minute moan at the end there. And I look forward to seeing the comments on the YouTube to this, because I'm sure that some people have weighed in with some very funny insults. I'd rather you didn't, but if you do, that's entirely up to you. But thank you, everybody, for your time. Really sad that Mark couldn't be with us today. He's got a big issue with his car, and it meant he can't join us. He is the heartbeat of this show. You get to see Jay and I and our pretty faces. Well, my ugly, pathetic one and Jay's other ugly one. But without Mark, this show wouldn't exist. So it's a big shout-out to Mark and all he does. And on that, we are desperately trying to keep raising money to pay for a producer to help take some of that work off of Mark. So if you want to support the show or you'd like to be a sponsor, please head over to glugc.com/support. And you have got the ability to sign up to our members and friends page. You can donate either a one-off donation or $10 a month. And we have two sponsorship packages up there, one at $250 a month, or is it $200, and the other at $500 a month for different sponsorship packages. Look, we'd love to get some more sponsors on board, to get another sponsor on board and to get some more members, because that helps alleviate the workload for Mark and for myself and for Jay in trying to put this show together. Because while we've recorded for an hour and 2 minutes and 11 seconds now, there is about 6 other hours after this that goes into it. And if we can help raise a bit of money, help fund the show a little bit, that'll allow some of that strain to be taken away and maybe us produce some more content. We've got some great ideas, but there's only so much time we've got to edit. And if we can get some more money in for editing, then we'll be able to bring you more content. Yep. So if you would like to either join, be a friend, be a supporter, or be a sponsor, let us know.
The other thing I want to add on to that, anybody watching this on YouTube, make sure to like this, subscribe it. I know I sound like a YouTuber saying that, but it is important. And then also, if you're listening, even if you're not listening to this, if you're watching this on YouTube, go on Spotify, go on Apple, leave a 5-star review, leave a comment, positive comment. I personally have a lot of haters that have, instead of reviewing our podcast, they review me like it's some sort of social credit thing. So
that was my favorite one. That was my favorite one. That 1-star review. Jay's dreadful. I don't like him. Okay.
Oh, that wasn't. Yeah, there's definitely some others. So we need to sort of drown that out. We need to sort of pump up the algorithm here. You guys can certainly help that. Go on Spotify, go on Apple, give us 5 stars. Subscribe to the channel on YouTube, like this video. It'll definitely help us out too.
And that's it. Good night. Take care. Goodbye.